Hello.
We ready?
And we're ready.
All right.
Welcome to Creepy Kentucky. I'm Quinn.
And I'm Laura. And is there anything we want to talk about before we jump into the beauteousness of this?
I got nothing.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm taking it with me today.
I got a cat.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And, Bernie. Yeah, Bernie. And I also want to congratulate the Bengals for their miraculous win last night.
Whoop, whoop.
Yeah. Kind of a miracle.
That'll make one of my coworkers very happy.
Yeah.
He's a big Bengals fan, and everyone makes fun of him for it. So.
Yeah, not this year, though.
Right.
They're in the championship game against whoever wins today, so. Woo. I mean, yeah.
And they
beat the number one seed at their stadium. So, I mean, you know.
Oh, hey. Look at that. Look at
them. Big, yeah. Okay. Anything? Oh, inventory was last week. Dear Lord.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, me too. I spent the one day working a lot with Tiffany. So, you can imagine the quality of my life last week.
Not great.
Yeah. Not really. Anyway, so we're going back in time.
Wee, 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 wee.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Very
Doctor Who. Time travel sound.
Yeah. Doctor Who sounding going on.
Yep. Yep.
We're going to talk about someone named James Wilkinson.
Oh, okay. Tell me all about James Wilkinson.
James Wilkinson. Okay. So he was born on March 24, 1757. That's how far back we're going.
Holy crap. Okay.
In Calvert County, Maryland. His parents were Joseph and Alethea Wilkinson. He was the youngest of four children. He grew up in a family which believed that they were part of the planter class, and thus they were much better than most of the other people in the area. And they believed this despite the fact that the other states in the area were at least three times the size of Stokely Manor, which was the Wilkinson family plantation. But, you know, if you grow up in a place called Stokely Manor, you're probably going to think you're pretty awesome, you know.
Yeah.
I grew up in Stokely Manor. sadly, hit the father, Joseph, died when James was six. The plantation was in debt by that time. But the family's creditors were very understanding with the family. The mother, Alethea, was allowed to keep the land that she had been given from her family as her dowry, and a part of the Wilkinson lands of the Stokely estate. It was enough to allow the family, who were two girls and two boys, to eventually make good marriages. Although the financial troubles left their mark on James, as we will see later. His grandmother paid for James to have a private tutor.
Oh.
And at the age of 13, he was sent to Baltimore along with several other boys, including his brother and John Custis, who was George Washington's stepson, to be inoculated against smallpox.
Oh.
So he was...
I saw a thing yesterday about smallpox. So before they had the vaccine... Yeah. They would just, like, get the pustules before they popped and rub them on people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's how they would inoculate people for it. I know. It was so gross. Ew.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Just get a jab in your arm. It's a whole lot easier.
Yeah, really. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
No, that's not good. I'm just like, oh God.
Yeah.
Oh God. It's a diet aid. What can you say? So he was enchanted by the city life of Baltimore, and eventually he was sent to Philadelphia to study at the medical school there. His studies included anatomy, surgery, botany, chemistry, pharmacy, and something called materia medica, which included diagnoses and prescribing medicines. He also stayed with a relative who was an experienced doctor. So after 2 years of this, James decided that he was experienced enough to set up his own shop as a doctor.
Oh boy.
Because, yeah. it's fine. He doesn't stay long. So,
okay. He's actually a doctor, right? Yeah, it's not.
Yeah. I mean, he was kind of a doctor. Like, I'm kind of a doctor. Anyway, he settled in someplace called Monocacy, Maryland, which was 40 miles west of Baltimore. The settlers were mostly Germans who farmed and who still only spoke German. So it was probably a pretty tedious existence for James. But soon he found something way more exciting to his sensibilities. On his first day in Philadelphia, he saw a military parade, which stirred his imagination. And when news of the Battle of Lexington came to Monocacy, James signed up with a militia in Georgetown, Maryland, and he would ride the 40 miles to and from Monocacy to practice with them once a week. Within 3 months of setting up his practice in this little town, he joined the army and set out for Boston, inspired by the Battle of Bunker Hill.
Okay.
So, because the newly created Continental Army, led by George Washington, obviously, needed soldiers and officers, Wilkinson was appointed a captain solely on the basis of his practice with the militia in Maryland. I mean, that was what it took. That was all it took.
Maiden really did not take much to be successful back in the day, did it?
No.
There were two requirements.
Yeah. Being a man.
Man and being white.
Being white, yep.
White man, you had it made.
Have things changed hugely?
Yes. Not really.
Yeah. So discipline was a problem with the new army, as many of its members were not trained, nor were they necessarily people who believed in the rigid structure of army command. However, when Wilkinson took charge of his regiment in March 1776, he immediately asserted himself, and this eventually led to his being posted as an aide to General Nathaniel Greene, who also believed discipline was important for a military outfit. So in March 1776, Wilkinson and his company were sent to Montreal as part of the American strategy to try to get Canada to be the 14th colony. Unfortunately, this strategy was faring poorly. The Continental Army's defeat at the Battle of Quebec and the diseases that were roaring through the army camps led to over a dozen regiments having to be sent to Montreal as reinforcements. So Wilkinson's company was one of them. He and his men traveled up the Hudson, across Lake Champlain. Maybe they saw Champ, we don't know. And along the Richelieu River to the banks of the St. Lawrence River, across from Montreal. And there he delivered his company to the command of General Benedict Arnold. At this point, obviously, Arnold was not known as a traitor. No. He was one of Washington's favorite generals, and he was a military hero.
Good old Nick.
Yeah, he had, along with Ethan Allen, captured Fort Ticonderoga and then had captured several forts in the north of New York, then had besieged Quebec until the British sent in troops to relieve the siege. So the British hoped to use a pincer movement to regain its position and retake its lost territory. The troops which had arrived on the St. Lawrence were told to dig in.
Dig in, boys.
Yeah. Get ready. The colonial forces were told that they were trapped, with 1,000 British soldiers surrounding them. Wilkinson sent a letter to General Greene claiming that the British were about to attack and annihilate them all. And the letter was passed on to Washington, and he passed it on to Congress. But Wilkinson totally exaggerated the situation because the British were at least 3 days away. So yeah, get ready for more of that. All right. One day he was ordered by Benedict Arnold to make contact with General John Sullivan, who was the overall commander of the American forces in Quebec. So as he rode to find Sullivan, however, Wilkinson saw redcoats on the road. So he immediately turned around and reported back to Arnold, who... he surmised that Sullivan had retreated. So Arnold ordered his men to retreat as well. The last two Americans to leave Canadian soil were Benedict Arnold and James Wilkinson. And at the end of June, Arnold took Wilkinson to Crown Point, New York, where the Continental Forces had gathered. To meet the man who had replaced Sullivan, General Horatio Gates. And Wilkinson soon transferred his loyalties from Arnold to Gates and virtually saw him as a father figure.
Daddy Gates.
Which is like a thing that he does. He works for a general, sees him as a father figure, sees someone else that he thinks is in a better situation.
But I mean... in his, I don't know, defense, he didn't have a dad.
Exactly.
So he just kind of found
him. Yeah. It's totally understandable. Right. You know? Yeah.
But Daddy Gates will. Number one daddy.
Yeah. Thus, Gates's ambition, which was to lead the northern forces of the army, became Wilkinson's as well. After the retreat, Gates had attached Wilkinson to the brigade of Arthur St. Clair, but Wilkinson became deathly ill with typhoid fever.
Oh, no.
And Gates ordered that the army medical staff keep him alive at any cost.
All right.
So he ended up under the care of this senior medical officer of the army, and he survived. Oh, although he claimed at one point to be able to hear his coffin being constructed in the fort outside. And Gates had, before this, promoted Wilkinson to brigade major.
Ooh.
He's going to start moving up here real quickly.
He climbs the ranks pretty quickly.
Yeah. He's one of these people that, like, I think he's, like, was born on at least second base, if not third base, and thinks he hit a home run.
Okay.
Yeah.
One of those guys.
Yeah. So by the time he was well, though, St. Clair's brigade had moved south to reinforce General Washington's men. So Gates attached Wilkinson to his own brigade and headed south himself. So at this point, the British had driven Washington out of New York City and into New Jersey, while part of his army remained, Washington's army remained in Westchester, New York. So Gates and Wilkinson at this point did not actually know where Washington was. So
where's Washington?
I don't know. It's the new hit book craze. days. Where's Washington?
Yep.
He's in like a red and white striped shirt and a hoodie.
He's incognito.
It's vlogging, yeah.
He puts on glasses.
Yeah. Exactly.
And a different wig.
Yeah.
He uses the brown wig instead of the white one.
Yeah. So they decided to send Wilkinson out to gather clues as to Washington's whereabouts. Wilkinson rode out to find redcoats everywhere.
Are you sure they weren't red and white striped coats?
Maybe they were. Where are the Tories? Question mark. It's the third series of children's book. He ran into General Charles Lee in a tavern in New Jersey, and Lee thought Washington was incapable of properly leading the Continental Army, and Lee convinced Horatio Gates of this. So Washington was preparing for a surprise attack on Trenton early on Christmas morning. Gates decided that he couldn't be part of this attack, so he just left.
I don't want to be part of the surprise attack. I'm leaving.
Yeah, he invented something else he had to do, and he left to do it.
I have to go take my dog to the vet.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah. You guys, I mean, I wish you the best. You know, good luck.
Good luck. But my dog needs
needs his shots. Yeah.
I got to get him neutered.
Neutered. Yeah. And breast. Yeah. So I'm
He just needs the full workup. I got to go.
Full workup. Yeah. Spa day. Okay. So Washington was furious when Wilkinson told him that Gates had returned to Philadelphia. But Gates, however, allowed Wilkinson to remain for the battle, which, despite having not gone to plan, was a huge victory for the colonists.
Whoop, whoop! Go colonists!
Yay! In
We won!
In January 1777, Wilkinson was promoted to lieutenant colonel by George Washington himself.
Oh, wow.
And given a commission in a new regiment. At this point, it was finally decided that the Continental Army could not rely on the militias and that the army needed to be standardized, which was promising for Wilkinson's career. Talk about failing upwards.
I don't know, right?
In that same month, he was sent on a recruiting mission to Pennsylvania, Philadelphia. But he spent most of the time courting a young lady named Anne Biddle, Nancy. She was the beautiful daughter of two of Philadelphia's most prominent and wealthy citizens.
Ooh.
Yeah. So it was becoming apparent that a large conflict was on the way between the Continental Army and the British along the Hudson River Valley. In March 1777, General Gates was made commander of the Northern Department over a General Philip Schuyler. And he promptly made Wilkinson his chief of staff.
Of course. Was it the Schuyler that was the father of the Schuyler sisters?
Who the hell's that?
From Hamilton.
Oh, maybe.
Listen, Schuyler and Angelica.
I don't know. I don't really know anything about Hamilton. So.
I know that one is spelled really weird. It's like
S-C-H-U-Y-L-E-R.
Yeah, that's how it was spelled.
Yeah.
So maybe it is him.
Yeah. Well, he got his command back in June anyway.
All right.
Yeah, congrats. And Gates and Wilkinson were disgusted by this. But there was another defeat at Fort Ticonderoga. So Congress decided to court-martial Schuyler, and Gates was given back his command at the Northern Department. So he immediately began to resupply the army, thus raising the morale. And as British General John Burgoyne moved south with his men, they were short on food, and they were also moving through unfamiliar forests. So Benedict Arnold showed up at the Americans' camp as well.
All right.
Yeah. So the two armies met just outside of Saratoga Springs, New York. On the first day, no one at headquarters really knew what was going on. So Wilkinson, God bless his little soul, decided to ride out from headquarters to try and figure it out. And he absolutely found chaos. The battle was so loud that it was difficult for company commanders to communicate with their men. However, one of the commanders spotted a weak spot in the British line and demanded fresh troops to make the breakthrough. So Wilkinson rode back to headquarters promising to get more troops, but Gates was too nervous to send them. So Benedict Arnold was standing there, got more and more angry at this delay. So he finally headed out to deal with things himself, and Wilkinson had to talk him into coming back to headquarters.
Come back, please.
Come back. Yeah, they said that was a sign of his, like, he was a very persuasive person. And that was, like, one of the main, because Arnold was furious and was determined to go out there and lead the battle himself and deal with things himself. And they said it had to have taken all of Wilkinson's persuasion to get him to not do that.
Jeez. Hey, man. How about we just go back to headquarters? We'll grab a pint.
We'll relax. We'll calm down.
Chill out.
Calm down.
Take a breather. Do some yoga.
Downward dogs. All the generals doing downward dogs.
There you go. There you go, Benny. Downward dog.
Downward dog it. Downward dog it. Finally decided to send these troops, but the troops accidentally ran into the center of the British line and suffered several casualties. So,
oops.
The first day ended with both sides claiming victory, so you know it was not a successful day for anyone.
We won! No, we won! No, we won!
As the days went on, Benedict Arnold raged about the conduct of the battle. Wilkinson also persuasively talked Gates into taking command of Arnold's companies away from him, leaving Arnold even more furious and giving some people at least the impression that Wilkinson was a snake due to his treatment of his former patron, Benedict Arnold.
I mean, kind of.
Yeah.
Hey, Gates. Oh, yeah. Go ahead and take Benedict's troops.
Yeah. Oh, get ready.
He can't.
Get ready. Yeah, he can't do it. So you need to take command. And he's like, what the fuck? I'm fine. I'm the only one who knows what's fucking going on. I can picture him saying, I'm the only one who knows what's going on around here.
It's like what we would yell all the time at Hustler.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in that case, it was true. So.
Right.
So, meanwhile, as the battle wore on, more men arrived to help the Continental Army. Fewer men fought for the British due to desertion. the Americans began to get the upper hand.
As we always do.
Yeah. Finally, the British lost 700 men at Bemis Heights due to the leadership of Benedict Arnold, who was wounded in the leg there.
My leg!
Yeah. Had a limp for the rest of his life.
Oh, poor Benny.
Burgoyne and his men tried to escape, but with the Americans to not only the southeast and west, but the north as well, because Fort Ticonderoga was about to be back in American hands, he was surrounded. Wilkinson received Burgoyne's emissary, Major Kingston, into the American camp to discuss surrender terms. The negotiations were influenced by rumors that British General Henry Clinton was on his way toward Albany. Those negotiating on behalf of the generals, Wilkinson, Kingston, James Craig, and Nicholas Sutherland, finessed the generals into a final agreement on the surrender, which was officially signed on October 17, 1777. And there's a famous painting of the signing of the surrender. And Wilkinson's in it.
Oh, like he's
standing right next to Gates, General Gates.
Okay.
So Wilkinson immediately collapsed afterwards with stomach pain so bad he thought he was going to die.
Oh man.
Yeah.
It's just cramps.
Yeah. I mean, it's more like panic cramps.
Yeah.
That's like a thing.
Yeah. Or he just really had to go to the bathroom.
I mean, maybe
I'm dying. No, man, just go poo.
Just poo poo. Go poo. At this point, Gates was seen in a much more favorable light than General Washington, who really hadn't won many battles of late. So Congress decided to elect a new board of war they filled it with military people rather than civilians. And this board of war was responsible for the entire infrastructure of the American war effort.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, Gates was selected. Yeah.
It's a little bit of an unfortunate name. Board of War.
Board of War. The Board of War. I mean, you know.
It almost sounds like they're bored of war.
Yeah.
They're tired of it.
I mean,
it's getting boring now.
It's like, they have wood. I mean, that to me is what it suggests. But
that's
I'm like,
true too.
But mentally, I'm like 10 in some way. So, you know.
A wooden plank.
A plank. Yeah, they got it. He's got wood.
Oh, this is board of war.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm mentally like 10. I'm not.
It's all right.
Yeah.
It's what makes this fun.
So Gates was selected to be president of the Wood, and Major General Thomas Conway was elected as Inspector General. Almost immediately, rumors began flying that Washington was being set up to be replaced by Gates. Washington himself, as he wintered at Valley Forge with troops deserting and officers resigning, was kind of losing his will to go on in his position. And his aide, oh God, here comes the name. His aide, Tench Tillman. I mean, I don't know.
Tench?
Tench. Yeah, I don't know. I really don't.
That had to have been a family name.
I would hope. What you would hope.
His mom didn't like, oh, Tench.
Yeah. What did you name your child? William Joseph Tench? Wait, what?
Tench.
Tench.
It's short for stench.
It's short
for stench. Because he stunk.
His aides. Tench Tillman. Oh my god. Tench Tillman. Yeah. I just left off the S when they were writing it down because they were like, no one's going to believe the.
We can't name
I'll
her.
I'll just take the S off.
And we'll do Tench. So we'll roll with it.
That's somewhat better. Is it?
Is it though?
Is it better? Oh my god.
Oh no.
Oh lord, help us all. Stench. Well, anyway, his age Stench said that I have never seen any stroke of ill fortune affect the general in the manner that this dirty underhand dealing has done. You go get him, Tench.
Yeah, yeah, you go.
Stinky. All right. Okay, so after a warm spell that autumn, the weather in the Northeast had turned very harsh. There was rain, sleet, snow, piercing winds on a daily basis.
Ooh.
Okay, so Wilkinson was headed south to deliver Gates's report on the Battle of Saratoga Springs to Congress. And he got caught in the weather, and he found himself stuck for a few days at Reading, Pennsylvania. So, on the second night there, Wilkinson accepted an invitation to join American Major General Lord Alexander Stirling. And yes, Ooh. Even though he was Lord Alexander, he was an American.
Okay.
And they were going to have dinner and drinks. So as the night wore on, Stirling fell asleep, passed out is what they, I mean, he, the book that I was reading was like, fell asleep. And I was like, oh yeah, passed out is what you mean.
Oh yeah, he passed out. He drank too much.
Oh, 100%.
We all know lords can't hold their liquor.
Yeah, they can't. Well, yeah. So Wilkinson continued to drink with, oh my God, here comes more names. All right. Wilkinson continued to drink with Stirling's aide, James Monroe, that's not the name, and his other aide, William McWilliams. there's some continuity in naming.
Whoops. Very unfortunate.
His name is William McWilliams Face. So...
what should we name our son? Mrs.
McWilliams
Face.
Our last name is McWilliam. What should we name our son?
William.
What else?
Of course.
I mean, if he had a brother, maybe he was named McWilliam McWilliams.
His name was Mick.
McWilliam. Yeah, Mick and Will.
Mick McWilliam.
McWilliams. McWilliams. McWilliams Face. At one point, yeah, I don't even want to know anymore.
No.
At one point, Wilkinson told the men that Gates had been sent a letter from Conway, who said that he had received a letter from Frederick the Great of Prussia.
Oh.
Yeah, praising Gates and disparaging Washington. So Wilkinson told the men that Conway wrote in this letter that, quote, heaven has been determined to save your country or a weak general and bad counselors would have ruined it.
Okay.
So McWilliams, aka McWilliams Face, he snitched on this and told Stirling what Conway or what Wilkinson had said after Stirling had sobered up. So meanwhile, Wilkinson, not thinking anything about anything, had gone on his way. He saw Nancy Biddle for 2 days, and then he finally got to Yorktown, Pennsylvania. This was where members of the Second Continental Congress had arrived after fleeing from Philadelphia on the approach of the British. News of the victory at Saratoga was sent to Benjamin Franklin overseas in hopes that he could use it to persuade more nations to support the American cause. So Gates was lauded by Congress, and he used the goodwill he'd garnered to unbelievably have Wilkinson made a brigadier general. And Wilkinson at this point was 20.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were that failing upwards.
Failing upwards. Well, yeah. So, yeah. Ironically, on the day Wilkinson was promoted, Sterling, Lord Alexander, told Washington about what Wilkinson said that Conway wrote in the letter about how, like, the bad counsel or the...
Hey, you know, Wilkinson a yeah. right. bunch of shit about you, man.
Yeah. So,
just want you to know.
Yeah. So Washington turned around and wrote to Conway telling him that he knew what was in the letter to Horatio Gates. Conway replied, telling Washington he never called the general weak. He said he thought Washington was brave, but had listened to people whose advice was not sound.
Okay.
Which is not ideal either.
Was saying.
Yeah.
But yeah, also not ideal.
Yeah. So
following bad advice.
So. Yeah, exactly. Like, well, you're not saying that I'm bad, but you're saying the people that I surround myself are bad with are bad. So like that's kind of that's on me too. So, you know.
Yeah.
People are great. Conway then sent copies of the original letter from Washington and Conway's reply to Henry Lawrence, who was president of Congress. And this action exposed the incidents to a wider audience.
All right.
So, as people urged Gates to keep his correspondence secret, because they were afraid of being tarred with the same brush, basically.
Yeah.
As what was about to happen. Gates started a search for the culprit who had told about this letter. So instead of confessing when Gates asked him about it, Wilkinson claimed he had no idea who had revealed the secret.
I don't know who did it.
I don't know. Oh my God.
Who would do such a thing?
Who would do such a thing? I don't know.
It wasn't me.
No.
Never.
I would never do that.
I would never do that. No.
No. And he, in fact, pointed the finger at Gates's aide, Robert Troup, and at our old pal, Alexander Hamilton, who had visited Gates's camp.
Of course they wouldn't blame Alexander Hamilton.
Yeah.
Gates kind of deserved it.
Yeah, really. I mean, you know. So Gates then wrote to Washington to accuse him of acquiring Gates's letters underhandedly. Washington wrote to Gates to tell him that, in fact, that was not what had happened. What had happened was Wilkinson had told McWilliams about what Conway said. That, in fact, Washington thought Wilkinson had told McWilliams in order to forewarn him, but now Washington knew that that was not what Wilkinson was trying to do. Ruh-roh.
Ruh-roh.
Yeah. The or letter.
As yeah. Scout would say, oh no!
Oh no!
Oh no!
Yeah.
Scout's listening in on the story.
Hi, Scout. What up? So the letter telling Gates this arrived at Gates's camp on January 2nd, 1778. Gates wrote back. And his groveling tone, quote, indicated that he realized that Washington was set as commander in chief.
Dun, dun.
And he was not going to get it. he accused Wilkinson of treason in his conduct.
Oh.
Wilkinson found it convenient to inspect fortresses in Western New York for a while. And when he got back to Albany, Gates had left to take up his position as president of the Board of War. The Wood of War.
The Warwood.
Yeah, the Warwood. He rode to Yorktown, and when he got there, what effectively what had become known as the Conway Cabal was effectively at an end, and Wilkinson's role in revealing it was becoming widely known in the army. So some of his soldier friends were forgiving of his indiscretion, but others, like Robert Troop, who he, you know, had blamed for, you know, who said was his fault, were not so forgiving. Wilkinson himself became offended. Like, the psychology of this is fascinating. He became offended on his own behalf by others' reactions to what he had done. And even challenged Horatio Gates to a duel in Yorktown.
Oh, geez.
Which ended in some kind of tenuous reconciliation.
I don't want to shoot you, man.
For now.
For now.
For now. Ooh. Yeah. Since Wilkinson had alienated several generals by now, almost the only general he had left to charm was Washington.
Well,
he told Washington that he did tell Sterling about the Conway letter as a warning, but Washington showed him Gates's letters accusing Wilkinson of betrayal, i.e. not doing it as a favor. So Wilkinson resigned from the Wood of War and once again challenged Gates to a duel, because that's what we do back then.
Right.
So they actually did it. Gates's pistol jammed twice, and Wilkinson fired into the air. So, in theory, that satisfied both sides' honor.
Okay.
However, Gates was not happy with this, and he demanded a certificate saying that, like, both sides had behaved honorably. But he refused to give one to Gates. So he wanted Gates to give one to him, but not to give one to him, not give one to Gates.
What?
Yeah. So, both men met again at the local courthouse, where Wilkinson lost his temper and demanded another duel. Gates had had enough at this point and just walked off.
I don't blame him.
And the men's dueling seconds, like their backups, you know, they got into a fight themselves and for so long that they couldn't testify for General Arthur St. Clair, and that was why they were all there in his court martial for the loss of Fort Ticonderoga, which fortunately he was found not guilty anyway, but still.
Oh, well,
yeah. So yeah, on November 12th, 1778, Wilkinson married Ann Biddle in Philadelphia.
Oh, he's married.
Yeah. And so as a Quaker, she was kind of expelled from her community by marrying an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
However, he now had many financial opportunities because he'd married a Biddle.
Ooh.
Yeah. In May 1779, Wilkinson was offered the opportunity to buy a place called Travos, the best Pennsylvania estate that was confiscated from a Tory. in exchange for this, Wilkinson verbally attacked Benedict Arnold, who was the enemy of Biddle family friend Joseph Reed, and who had gotten him like this estate. So Arnold was already doing suspicious things, quote unquote, like helping loyalists in Philadelphia, where he had been named military governor.
Oh.
So, Wilkinson accused Arnold of skimming money off the top of his purchase of some rum for the war effort, because, you know. It's not entirely certain what actually led to his treason, but it was very shortly after this that Arnold let the British know that he could be bought.
Oh, with rum.
Yeah. And treason. So
give me a rum and I will go against my country so fast. I don't even need that much. I just need a bottle. Just Bailey's. Give me a bottle of rum and
Bailey's. Oh, ooh. Bourbon cream. Yeah. Yeah, maybe. Let me just say maybe.
Leonard bought me a bottle of Evan Williams Nog.
Oh, yeah, that shit's the good stuff, too.
Oh, yeah. I drank it in 3 days.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing about that stuff is you don't realize how fast you're drinking it. And then you're like,
oh. Oh.
Where'd my bottle go? It's empty. You're like,
it's turning all gone. Off,
and there's like two or three drops coming out. You're like, where?
Why is my bourbon cream gone? But why is it gone?
Why is it gone?
Why is it gone?
Why can't it be a magical? Why can't it be a magical bottle that just refills itself constantly?
Oh God, that'd be nice.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Anyway. Back on track again.
Now I'm going to be thinking about that all day. Oh, yeah. Welcome to Tangentville. Because this estate was very, very expensive to run. In July of 1779, Wilkinson accepted Congress's offer of the post of clothier general to the army. And he was making $5,000 a year at this, which, like, that is not that much less than I make now. So,
and thanks for sure helping.
Yeah.
That like 1700s money.
Yeah, that was probably, oh, I mean, that was huge amounts of money.
Yeah, so it was probably a good, like, $500,000.
Probably. Yeah, yeah, probably. So his new job required him to order clothing, shoes, and blankets to the army and then see that they were distributed.
$5,000 a year?
Yeah, that was all he did.
Oh my God.
The system, as it was very inefficient, which he did try to improve, but he soon started spending more time on his estate and less time doing his thankless task. Which meant that getting provisions to the troops fell back on General Washington. This came at a time when overconfident Americans began suffering a series of setbacks in the war, but none were more grievous than the revelation in September 1779 of the betrayal of Benedict Arnold.
Dun, dun, dun!
Yes. And so heightened paranoia started, like, just ran rampant across the states and led to people suspecting their neighbors of treachery. And this is the type of person that Wilkinson was. He even made lists of loyalists in Philadelphia whose homes and businesses he believed needed to be boycotted.
Oh my God.
What a charmer.
Great guy.
Yeah. So, just wait. So, the tides of fortune were turning back towards America, though. And in 1780 and 81, it led to victories for the Continental Army. So, Wilkinson resigned his post in 1781 after 2 years of fucking it up, realizing, and he said this in his resignation letter, that he just did not have the talents for the job. Which I'm like, 2 years later, it took you 2 years later
to realize you didn't have the talent. Okay, James.
Yeah. Also, he may have become unhappy in realizing that he gave up a career in what you might call the field, since he was a pretty good soldier, like, especially when he was doing, like, reconnaissance and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that could have brought him much more glory than the being the clothier general did. But when the war was over, his horizons obviously narrowed considerably, and he just did not have a talent in buying and selling goods with a lot of competition around him. But he grew more and more taken with the idea of acquiring land.
Oh.
So in 1783, Wilkinson sold Trevose. He moved his wife and infant son back in with her father.
Go live with your dad, honey.
Yeah. And he left for the West. Ooh. And that's where I'm going to end it.
Woo! He's heading west.
He's heading west. Yeah.
James heads west.
James. That's how he heads. That's our next History Channel show, is Wilkinson Goes West. It's the companion piece to Going South with Cassius Clay. Yeah. Wilkinson heads west.
Wilkinson heads west and heading south with Cassius Clay.
We're going to have to find a going north with somebody at some
point. Yeah, someone's going to have to go north, and we have to have someone going east.
Going north with so-and-so. So, yeah. So, I'm going to stop there.
All right.
And then that was the setting. This is the setting the scene portion of our program. And next week, we actually get into the Kentucky portion more.
I was wondering if this was going to be a Kentucky one.
Oh, yeah. No, it's. Yeah,
is this the one you said has
Aaron Burr?
Yes. All right.
Oh, yeah. No, there's. Yeah. No. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We have an email.
Mm-hmm.
It's creepykentucky@gmail.com.
And we have a Twitter and an Instagram. Yeah.
Which I might be sharing pictures of my beautiful homemade dinner tonight.
Do it.
I'm so excited.
I expect pictures of your homemade dinner tonight as well.
I'm definitely going to be sending you pictures of it.
Oh, yeah. Like close up of the ravioli interior surrounded with sauce and stuff.
You're going to make a couple of them be raviolos. So there's egg yolk in it.
Yum.
I know. We're getting fancy. I'm really excited.
Oh. Sounds so good.
All right. Who are we? What's the headline?
Oh, I think we know.
Angel Cox.
Yeah.
Of course.
I think we know who we're. Oh, we're going to be Wilkinsoning this one, because you wait till next week. And that's not even the worst. Next week is way worse. And not even the worst.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Okay. This is not a good, like, I have to say, like, so the reason that I started deciding to do this was, so Ron and I were on the way to Frankfurt.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about, like, oh, have you heard, like, are you going to do something about James Wilkinson? And I was like, I had no idea who the fuck that was, but I didn't want to act like an idiot totally, so I was like, oh yeah, probably. So he starts telling me about all the stuff that he did, and I was like, holy shit, have I never heard of him? And, like, I never heard of, like, no one talked about him in school or anything like that. And I was like, oh, this has to be rectified here shortly.
Right. I've never heard of him either, so.
Yeah.
All right.
Alrighty. So, James Wilkinson?
Yep.
Okay.
All right. One, two, three. Go. James
Wilkinson.
What
the
hell?
Hell.